Hey guys, welcome back to the Football Diary podcast. It's been a couple of weeks that we've been missing for. It's not really much happened in that time, to be fair. I think there was a small game that Man City played that I think won't be worth mentioning, if I'm honest. So we'll scoot over that. But yeah, in the last week in football, obviously the season has finished, but there's been a lot of new revelations coming out, new transfer gossip, and a lot of things worth talking about. And I've got Dave and Miles with me here today to go through all of that. I think the first point of the agenda, I know it's tempting to go into Bournemouth and their managerial changes, but I'm going to start with the Saudi Pro League. Every day it feels like there's another big name being linked to moving to Saudi Arabia. And I know Ronaldo started it last season, but it's snowballing more and more to the point where you ask yourself, what is going on in Saudi Arabia? Miles, you've done a bit of digging into this and some big names being linked, right? So Ruben Neves, half the Chelsea team. It's mad, isn't it? What's your take on it, mate?
My first take is it's a bit harsh to say Ronaldo started it, forgetting West Brom's Mateus Pereira. Come on. Household name, he was. That was a big move. Yeah. No, it's a really interesting situation because we've seen things like this before. We saw the MLS try it to a small degree at one point. We've seen the Chinese Super League obviously come round and start cherry picking some very particular Premier League talent, although it feels like it never quite got to the level that the Saudi League is trying to right now. And there have been players that have been in Saudi Arabia for a year or two now already. I'm thinking of the likes of Ava Banega, and it was clear that they wanted to build a sporting project there. But something doesn't sit right with me about some of it. And it's difficult because as Westerners and fans of European football, you don't want to almost monopolize football to the point where you say that other nations can't have this. That's not the point at all. It would be really nice to see football as a global game expand. But the way in which it's being run currently just feels slightly, I don't know, unsavory, doesn't it? When you look at the fact that the Saudi investment fund that own Newcastle own four of the clubs in Saudi Arabia who are the four biggest spenders right now. That just seems bizarre. Imagine if all of a sudden Sheikh Mansour went and bought Man United, Liverpool and Chelsea as well. It would be such a weird setup and you'd notice that things didn't quite feel above board there. And then when you also see that not only has he got Newcastle on their books, they're also really heavily involved with Todd Boehly and Chelsea, and now this get out of jail free card for Chelsea and their financial fair play worries has kind of found itself out of nowhere, where now any fringe players that have got massive wages at Chelsea that they're trying to shift and don't really know how to are being linked with Saudi Arabia. It feels like that's a real win-win. The Saudi Pro League gets some big names, Chelsea clears some money off their books. But the people that don't win are the rest of the footballing pyramid in England, for example, or the other Saudi clubs that don't have the same backing. It's a really weird system that doesn't quite feel right at this time.
No, it feels massively unregulated as well. And I know if Premier League clubs decided to do that, there'd be huge sanctions, as you know.
Absolutely.
But the players they're talking about and the fees they're talking about, especially from Chelsea going that way, you've got Kalidou Koulibaly, who's only been there a year. Edouard Mendy, who was, you know, FIFA Goalkeeper of the Year only like 2 years ago. Who else is there? Remind me, N'Golo Kante as well. Hakim Ziyech, some massive names. Yeah. And, you know, Ruben Neves has been linked as well at the age of 26. So clearly money is talking in this situation, Dave, isn't it? And it's kind of disconcerting to see as a football fan that much money have that much influence. And I know with the European Super League, we've talked about in the past how it's always like a looming threat that money can skew the playing field slightly. But on this scale, it's a little bit worrying, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the sad thing, really, is that it's not going for a sporting project. It's not going for a football project. It is mainly all for the money. And that's kind of like the concerning thing for me, really. Is I think the main thing is that these players, what is it? Luka Modric has been offered something like 600 million over the space of 3 years to go from.
Turned it down, supposedly, though. Fair play
but
to him.
Players don't even have to go there for 4 or 5 years. They can literally go for a couple of years or a year even, and they've made probably more in a year there than they would have done four or five years, you know, obviously in Europe, which is crazy to think. So you can see why they're obviously tempted by the prospect of it, but it doesn't sit right with me that we look at obviously what was happening in China. Obviously you look at likes of Ighalo and the players who were going towards the end of their career. But now you have it on the flip side of it. We're having players who are actually kind of in the peak. You've obviously got the likes of Ruben Neves, who was, you know, captaining Porto in the Champions League at the age of 18, 19. He's only 26 now, and he's going, you know, he looks like he's on his way, which is just crazy to think. So I don't know what's going to happen, to be honest. It's,
and in, you have, in Neves's defence, though, have you ever visited Wolverhampton? I might run to Saudi Arabia if I'd lived in Wolverhampton for a few years.
I mean, you're...
me. This Sorry. Is a guy from Birmingham speaking here. Apologies to anyone from Wolverhampton.
I know. Yeah. I know. Obviously, Ronaldo went and he said, "Oh, this is going to be one of the top leagues in, you know, a top five league really in the world." And I don't think anyone really took him seriously when he said that. But if you look at what it's attracting, it's.
It's a circus, though, isn't it? Because you throw that much money in a short space of time, it's not going to make it that much better. No. I don't know if you caught any of the Saudi Pro League over this last season where Ronaldo's highlights reel is basically him just taking the piss out of them because they're so poor. The goalkeeping's terrible. The defending's terrible. And it didn't take much for, you know, a Ronaldo clearly past his prime to boss the league. Yes, they've got
Didn't win it though.
No, he didn't though. Yeah, that's true. But they've got like a dozen players going over there at least in the next summer window, aren't they? So it will undoubtedly improve the level of teams, Miles. But how long do you think it's going to take if Saudi Arabia want to be taken seriously? Because all that money will happen, will make changes significantly in the next year or so, but not to the level of it being in the same league as like even the French league, I would say.
I don't know, if I'm totally honest. I think the French league's an interesting example because actually there, it's a similar setup where money talks and there's one team, there was two for a while with Monaco that bankrolled the league.
Yeah. Bad example.
And then, well, no, it's a good example though because if you're talking about Saudi Arabia trying to get into the top five, that's kind of the level that they're competing with. And you mentioned the standard of defending and goalkeeping and the fact that sides are looking at players like Koulibaly and Mendy rather than just Ronaldo, Messi, Neymar suggests that maybe it is more of a long-term project in some ways. What will be interesting is to see whether money goes into the infrastructure lower than that and whether Saudi Arabia start developing a good national team, for example, because, yeah, all right, they surprised us all at the World Cup a little bit, but if you want a league to be successful, you have to also rely on some of your homegrown players because, yeah, right now you can throw a load of money at someone like Ronaldo, but he's not going to be there forever. And then what? What are you left with? You need to have built something long term. It's perfect for the Premier League, if we're totally honest, because for the longest time, the Premier League have inflated the market and made it so if you ever want to comply with financial fair play, you have no choice but to sell your players to players within your league, to clubs within your league, because no one else can afford the wages. Here's a massive, massive caveat to that, where all of a sudden someone is willing to give you that money. And it's interesting because where does that stop? Because you look at China was a really good example. Someone like Oscar that went over there in the prime of his career. Then look at someone like Carrasco, who went over there when he wanted to come back. That's difficult all of a sudden, and he had to take a pay cut to do that. So if someone like Neves goes to Saudi Arabia, is there a path for him to ever come back if he inflates his value that much? And that's where it becomes dangerous. I think the Premier League really has to look at the situation with Newcastle and Chelsea and their clear connections, because a lot has come to light over this whole business. The fact that there are such clear links between the Saudi investment funds and Clear Lake Capital suggests that actually what we're criticising Saudi Arabia for having four clubs owned by the same people, are we kind of already seeing the same thing on our shores? It's just, I don't know. You see so many people that talk about how much they feel disillusioned by football and they don't really connect with the game since the financial aspects have taken over. And I don't want to sound like one of those people that complained about the formation of the Premier League, but I don't know. You got to wait and see. You've got to wait and see what they do with the game over there and what they invest into making it right. Because right now, no real grassroots, no real women's game. It's a poor setup. We don't need to get into the logistics of the human rights issues that have been discussed widely with Newcastle, for example. You want to see football in its purest form, really, not just a Masters League.
Well, that's the thing. We had the World Cup in Qatar as well, and you're thinking to yourself, what's the legacy from that? You know, is it just going to be huge stadia that won't ever be filled? So far, you know, I'm not optimistic about the Qatar football aspect either, but Saudi Arabia is clearly a huge pool financially, isn't it?
There should be a legacy. The Middle East should have football and it should be able to celebrate it as its sport, but it should be done organically and properly. It shouldn't be a case of let's buy two teams in England, essentially, and start taking from them, and let's put ludicrous amounts of money to attract players in. Maybe that's what it takes. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe they wanted to do it an authentic way, and no one's interested in that. But it just, it doesn't feel like they're putting the work in, and that feels kind of like cheating the sport, and that's a shame.
Yeah. Cheating the sport's a good way of putting it, actually. It does feel like that. And as genuine football fans, you know, with no vested interest in football in the Middle East at the moment, other than just wanting to see it grow organically, like you say, it does feel like a bit of a cheat code. And, you know, there's a few teams that we can say have been using cheat codes over the past years. And I hope when the dust has settled over everything that's being thrown against Man City, for example, there will be some comeuppance from it. But it's not going to be a quick process either, is it? So we'll see. Yeah. Anyway, that's my dig at Man City gone. We'll get that out of the way early. And in terms of like being a draw, one team that still is a massive draw on European shores is Real Madrid. They've managed to seal the signing of Jude Bellingham. Massive signing, Dave, for any team, really. And it was linked with Liverpool for a while. Clearly, they're not going to be competing at the top table. Another slide dig there. So see how I get that in.
You love this.
I'm on a roll, mate.
I was bad for slagging off Wolverhampton.
We're an inclusive team here, so come on, I've just got to get it in sometimes. But Jude Bellingham is such an incredible player at the age of 19. I'm really excited to see him in that Real Madrid midfield, aren't you?
Oh yeah, 100%. I think the thing for me is this is pressure football. It's the highest level now. Obviously, all due respect to Dortmund, obviously a very big club in Germany, but this is the pinnacle of his career now. And, you know, a very, very early stage of his career, even. I'm quite surprised, to be honest, that it was Madrid, because I thought he would go to the Premier League first. I struggle to see if he could jump down to the Premier League from Real Madrid. The only way I could probably see it is if it doesn't quite work out for him there, because you don't very often see players make the jump from Real Madrid back to the Premier League. It tends to be the Premier League and then to Real Madrid. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but I think it's a great signing. I think it'll be interesting to see what, obviously, where Real Madrid go now elsewhere in the market, because I've heard the president come out and say this is it. That's him and Hosslu are the last two signings for them, which is, I find that hard to believe, to be honest.
It sounds outrageous, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, I think the Madrid midfield, as I say, is looking fantastic now. They've obviously got Tchouaméni there, they've got Camavinga, and obviously they're replenishing that midfield as it ages quite handily, aren't they, Miles? It looks like they're sorted for a while, even though I think Carlo Ancelotti's been linked to the Brazil national team, which is mad. But no, Real Madrid's midfield, at least, in good hands.
Yeah, it's incredible what that squad's doing, because they've managed to, we've said it for the longest time, we said it before the Bellingham signing, that they were managing to balance the experienced midfielders they've got that are still world-class whilst bringing through the next kind of generation of elite talent. And they've just done it again. We forget Federico Valverde is still there as well, and is one of the best talents in world football. And although he started playing in a more advanced role, he's certainly a midfielder. That's four that are under 25, and they've still got Toni Kroos and still got Luka Modric at the time of recording. Who knows what Saudi will do. But it's incredible, and I'm really excited to see where Bellingham fits in, because actually, when you look at the current iteration of Real Madrid's midfield and how you kind of recycle that, you wonder who takes on what role. Who's your Casemiro? Yeah. Who's your Cruz? Who's your Modric? Or do they change tactics completely? Because actually, Tchouaméni, Camavinga and Bellingham can all do very similar roles. They're all very skilled in every area of the midfield, basically. They're all very box-to-box. They're all good ball carriers. They can all shoot. They're all really good at reading the game. They're really intelligent players. So it's a really exciting midfield. We've seen Camavinga obviously play in other positions as well as Valverde. So you'd imagine the centre of the park is going to be Bellingham's own, particularly for that kind of money. And it's a wonderful opportunity. It's amazing that it's come about this early from our perspective, because we're English and we want to see a young English player do well. Yeah. But realistically, it's no different to Camavinga going or Tchouaméni going. Just because they're French, they're essentially what they are fantastic young midfielders. And that's the category that Bellingham's in. If anything, he might be slightly further ahead in his development than the two of them were when they first joined. So it's a really exciting time for him. I don't think it closes the door for a future move to England. I just don't think he needs it. I think we all kind of, again, maybe it's our isolated view because we're in England and we follow the Premier League more than anything else. We kind of view that as the very top in some ways. But there is no higher than Real Madrid. But then look at someone like Casemiro. He had a fantastic career at Real Madrid. You can't say that he left Real Madrid on a low point at all. It wasn't that his time wasn't a success there, but there came the time where he wanted a new challenge and he moved to Man United. We might see something similar from Bellingham. He might have some really successful years at Madrid and fancy a new challenge at some stage. You never know. So there are options for him, but right now I'm really interested to see the team that Madrid build around him, because I absolutely do not believe that they're done in the transfer market. Not with Benzema gone. Hossellou is not playing up front from 38 games next season, is he? That's no shade to Hossellou. He scored a lot of goals in La Liga the last few seasons, but come on.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think with Jude Bellingham as well, at 19 years old, you do have to sort of remind yourself how young he is. But listening to him talk in front of the Madrid press at his press conference and his unveiling, he had the kind of attitude and the charisma of somebody well beyond that age, didn't he? And I think that's why I feel like he's almost head and shoulders above Camavinga and Tchouaméni, because he's got that maturity. And when he plays for England and for Dortmund, even for Birmingham when he was like 16, he had such an authority on the pitch and he carried himself with such confidence that it wasn't even close to arrogance either. He's a very humble guy. Easy to like, easy to root for whoever he's playing for, with the exception of Liverpool. If it had gone there, I don't know what I'd have been saying. So glad he's dodged that. But I just think he's such an impressive guy, isn't he, Dave? I'm really just blown away by what he's showing to the world. I don't know how I'd react if I transferred to Real Madrid at any age, let alone 19.
Do you think it's key that they've been able to retain Modric in that this Real Madrid team is all of a sudden, it's not becoming an experience it was? Obviously, they've just lost Benzema. Obviously, they've still got the likes of Carvajal, obviously Toni Kroos. I think it's really important that obviously getting these young players in, but they're also got these experienced winners around them to kind of really bed them in and show them obviously how to win. And I think that's the important thing for me. I think keeping Modric in there is probably really a massive boost for them, really, ahead of obviously the new season. Because then if you look at it, you've only really got Toni Kroos. Obviously Valverde's been there for, what is it, two or three years now, and all of a sudden it's starting to look like quite an inexperienced team.
You say that, but the experience of even the young players is mental. Yeah. Valverde is a great example. He's won Champions Leagues. And then their back line is a bit more experienced with the likes of Rudiger, David Alaba, Ferland Mendy,
Nacho.
Like you say, Carvajal. Nacho is going to be their new club captain as well. So there are plenty of people around that will help them adopt that kind of Madrid way. And even someone like Vinicius. Is there a player that gets what it means to be a Real Madrid player any more than Vinicius Jr. right now? He's probably the best player in La Liga. He's an absolute talent on the pitch. And he seems like he's got a really mature head on his shoulders as well. Although he's had these kind of quite outward emotional outbursts towards the horrible treatment he's received, the way he talks about it and the way he kind of plays his game, I think he's a fantastic leader in that in that team. So even though they are young, they've done a really good job around Madrid at kind of identifying personalities, it seems, as well, which isn't necessarily what you would have said about the Galactico era or what they did kind of post the Galactico era even. It seems like they're actually planning quite a lot now, which is really impressive.
In other transfer news, actually, we'll move on from Jude Bellingham, but loads of names still up in the air. Moise Caicedo is one, James Maddison, Declan Rice, still don't know where he's going to go. Kai Havertz, I keep seeing appearing every week. So let me throw that to you, Miles. Pick any name out of there and say what you think is going to happen. And also the Arsenal midfield, because Thomas Partey is apparently leaving as well. So where that leaves them, they clearly need midfielders as well. So what do you foresee?
Do we not want to stay with the Bellingham family and talk about the bigger news on that day that Job went to Sunderland? Imagine that family dinner, by the way. The fact that the next day Jude was pictured at the Bernabeu on the pitch with his brother showed quite kind of how little impact the Sunderland move had done. I can't imagine Jude is on Stadium Alight holding up Job's shirt next week.
All right, poor guy.
No, there's some really interesting business going around, and Arsenal definitely are the one to kind of watch right now. We know that they're going to try and build on a really successful season last year. They're back in the Champions League. They've got to compete there, and they do want to catch City at some point. There was talk that PSG tried to contact Mikel Arteta, and I think he kind of laughed that off straight away. So they're really trying to build a project there. I'm really interested by how they're doing that, because it seems like they're willing to let quite a lot go in a small squad. I think we all looked at their midfield and realised that it lacked depth. So when you see them linked with Moise Caicedo and Declan Rice, it makes sense, but it's a lot of money. for just one player. And the fact that they're now kind of making those funds up by letting the likes of Granit Xhaka and Thomas Partey go, supposedly. I don't know. That seems odd. Now, obviously, Partey's had his issues off the pitch, and maybe Arsenal are looking to remove him from their club before that kind of comes to light any further. Xhaka kind of deserves a goodbye if he wants one after the kind of renaissance he's had. But there's a lot of building to be done at Arsenal. I'm really interested by the Kai Havertz links. That's the one for me. Because I think actually, Jesus, the best thing he did last season was bring Saka and Martinelli into the team more. And I think Havertz, we saw him at Leverkusen kind of being more of a number 10, kind of false nine.
Yeah.
And Chelsea have kind of had to rely on him to be slightly further at the pitch. But actually, the way that he would link up with Saka and Martinelli, that's outstanding. I wonder where it leaves Jesus, because I can't see an Arsenal team with Ødegaard, Havertz, Jesus, Martinelli, and Saka all on the pitch at once. And I know you need depth, but they're very, very big names to be leaving on the bench. So I really want to know what that means for this Arsenal side, but I think it would be a great, great signing to bring Havertz in, because I don't think we've seen the best of him at Chelsea, and I think we'd probably see more of him in that Arsenal setup, personally.
I think stylistically, it seems to make more sense for him to go there. He's been linked with Real Madrid as well. Again, I can't see how that works in their front line. They need an out-and-out striker, don't they, really? But Arsenal, it seems to make sense for Kai Havertz to go there more than it does for Chelsea. Declan Rice, though, Dave, where do you see him going? Because obviously he's gone out, if he does leave, he's gone out on a high at West Ham, linked to two or three different teams, and arguably would strengthen any midfield in the Premier League. So what are your thoughts on Declan Rice?
Yeah, it seems as though obviously Arsenal are in the best position to pick Rice up. And I mean, all the paper talk and the rumours are that they're sort of in pole position for him. I think there's a couple other teams maybe in the league who'd be probably interested in him, but maybe not in the best position financially, one of them being Chelsea and one of them being Man United.
There you go. I was waiting for that. Ten Hag's fuming, isn't he, apparently, about that specifically.
Yeah, and rightfully so. You know, I think there's so much frustration going on at the club at the minute. But I think he'd be brilliant for Arsenal. I think he would offer them a lot of, obviously, solidity in that area of the pitch. Obviously, the foundations that they will have. And you think about his age as well. It's perfect. The sort of profile that they're looking for, somebody to come in and be a leader as well. And obviously, what he did for West Ham, he was one of the best midfielders in the league last year, and that is something that Arsenal desperately need. And obviously, we've mentioned Xhaka and Partey look like they're going out the door. It's going to open up a position for him that's his for the taking, really, and he'll be a fixture of their project going forward. And I think that Arsenal need to address. If they're letting those two players leave, then clearly they've got something lined up and they've got plans in place, and it does look like that, you know, he's their number one priority. So we'll see what happens to that.
Here's one for you. Now, I'm willing to go out on a limb here, because in a minute we're going to talk about me getting things right in the past. So when I get this wrong and you put it on Instagram in the future, that's fine. But I'm going to say Declan Rice not going to Arsenal. Declan Rice, Manchester City.
I mean, why though? Why?
Replacing Gundogan. I reckon late doors, Gundogan signs for Barcelona, and then Man City go, okay, we need our replacement. Mm. We'll give you 90 million and Calvin Phillips. We'll have Declan Rice.
They take West Ham that go, as well.
That's better than 80 million from Arsenal. Do you think Rice and Rodri don't play together? Rice can be a much more advanced midfielder. We saw it for West Ham this season. Actually, I think Rice is more of a number eight in the kind of Ilkay Gundogan. He's not Ilkay Gundogan, just like Gundogan, rather than more of a six like Rodri.
I see what you're saying. He's nowhere near technically as good as Gundogan. Gundogan's on another level.
And you're going to send it to Pep Guardiola? Dave. And I also think, actually, he might be.
Well, I think, well, you know what? I think the Declan Rice disrespect, because he's English, everyone seems to think his fee's inflated slightly. But as soon as he was linked to a move to, say, Bayern Munich, I think everyone suddenly went, might actually be pretty good.
People recognise him.
Again, linked to City. Yeah, I think if he did move there, it would enhance his reputation and, you know, make people see him for what he really is, because he's not had the chance to flourish with better players around him yet. And I think he will.
I know this is a different Arsenal side to the one that maybe we're used to of the last few years. But do you remember for years that they were supposedly after Wilf Zaha, and Crystal Palace just stood firm on their valuation and said, no, he's worth more than that to us. If you're not willing to pay it, we're not selling him. I think we could get down a similar road for that with Declan Rice, where Arsenal supposedly have bid 80 million and West Ham are valuing him at 120. That's a massive, massive gap to make up, particularly if Arsenal are looking to strengthen other areas of the squad. Whereas City, I think they'll pay that if they want him. I don't know. There's my shout. If I'm wrong, I think we'll laugh at me afterwards.
They're in a great position, West Ham, really. Has he got 2 years left on his deal still?
Yeah.
Well, they were in a great position until the owner came out and said, yeah, we're going to sell him this summer. That was a stupid thing to say. Because actually, I know it's only silly in a little social media clip, but there was a video going around the other day of a kid met Declan Rice in the park and said, where are you going to play next year? And he said, West Ham. I love West Ham. And all right, I've seen Delf say that. I've seen Grealish say that. It's fine. That happens. But when your owner comes out and says, we are going to sell them this summer, that knocks 10 million off the price, surely, because you know he's available. But if they can get a bidding war going, that's where you build it back up again. And I wonder if City will get involved in that. And you know what happens if City get involved in a bidding war? They tend to win.
Yeah, true. Speaking of midfielders and signing big midfielders for big teams, Liverpool probably won't need to sign a big midfielder this season, will they, other than Alexis McAllister? Because Trent Alexander-Arnold suddenly looks like he might be playing quite an advanced role. I mean, Gareth Southgate, I say experimented with him. It's one thing we've been shouting about, or you specifically, Miles, have been shouting about for a long time. Moving Trent in a more advanced position just opened up so many avenues for him to pick a pass. And he played really well in that position, didn't he? Can you see him being played there for England more and for Liverpool more? How can you see him being used going forward?
I really hope he plays there for England more, provided he gets some game time there at his club, because coaching and a national team like Gareth Southgate has to, it's quite a limited experience, really. You don't get a lot of time to completely change a player's position. We've seen him do it before with Kyle Walker and bring him into centre-back, but it's a really hard job to do unless that person has all the skills that they need. And actually, when you think about players that are under such meticulous coaches as someone like Trent or Kyle Walker with Guardiola and Klopp, there's a lot of details you've got to get across really quickly. It's helped that Trent has already started to kind of in-game move into that midfield role with Liverpool, although it's not like an isolated position. He's still covering the right-back position. We're really used to seeing defenders and particularly fullbacks move into that space now. John Stones is doing it as well at Man City, for example. So England have got options there. But for the longest time, this seems to have been the most logical outcome, because it's a very different game playing the centre of midfield to playing right back. There's so much more you have to think about because the game is everywhere. The game is in front, behind. You have to really be conscious of your surroundings in centre midfield. But the difference is there are three of you most of the time in modern formations. And one of Trent's biggest problems is when he gets isolated on his own, he looks a bit lost. And when he's right back, there's so much space to hit behind him. If he's in centre midfield, let's not forget, he's still got defensive qualities. They're not perfect and they're not top level for a defender, but as a midfielder who needs to put a challenge in or read the play, he's used to doing that. And we know about his ability going forward. So really, the only thing you need to coach in him is how to read that side of the game as a centre midfielder. And he seems like a really intelligent footballing brain. He seems to love football. So I feel like he'd pick that up really quickly if the coaching happens. And actually, a midfield three for England of Declan Rice, Trent and Bellingham, all of a sudden that looked like one of our weakest areas in the squad. And that's world class if they get it right. If we can coach Trent to stay in that kind of position, and it looked like, all right, it's Malta, but he was great, I thought. I think he played really, really well. And it's a player we know has really natural talent and we've not been able to praise enough over the last couple of years. This could be a massive turning point for his career if Liverpool can latch onto it as well.
Yeah, I think from a sense of it making sense, I think the fact that he's had to have defensive duties as his main role, pretty much, or at least 50-50 attacking and defending, means that he can't go as cavalier as he wants to. But when he plays against weaker opposition from wing-back, he really exploits that from his attacking qualities. His crosses and his passes are so precise. It's a clear strength of his. Imagine him in midfield regularly, not having to think about being the defensive kind of fulcrum in that role. He can go forward, yes, like you say, play passes and intercept where necessary. But I think, Dave, the shackles being off for Trent Alexander-Arnold might be liberating for him. I can see him really enjoying it being there as well, can't you?
Yeah, and I think we could see what he offered in this game. Obviously, I know it's Malta, and there will be obviously a lot more difficult games and, you know, far more accomplished teams than Malta. But I think it was promising what we saw. And obviously, he took his goal brilliantly. He's arguably probably got one of the best strikes of the ball in the team. He obviously doesn't get to showcase it enough because he's not really been in the team. But I think it's going to be great for England that what he's going to be able to offer, obviously, on the ball. You know, there's no doubt that he does need to improve his sort of tactical awareness and off the ball defensive abilities. That we know that obviously the vulnerabilities have been there, and we've seen him throughout the season at Liverpool when he's been playing at fullback and before he came into this sort of hybrid role. But I think it's, you know, it's definitely something. He offers something really different to what we have in midfield, and it's something that we've been, you know, crying out for really in the England midfield for a while now. And obviously, like Miles said, we have spoken about that. We think he would offer a lot more in a midfield position rather than as a defender, where he does have his vulnerabilities. And it'll be interesting to see. I think see what he can offer against the more established teams. This was a good step for him, and I think really showcasing what he's all about in this game. I feel like it'll give him a lot of confidence, but it'd be good to see what he can do against the better teams as well.
Let's not forget, other international sides have done really similar things with really good technical footballers. Think about Ukraine, Alexander Zinchenko, although we see him drift into midfield for Arsenal and City, traditionally as a left back, but plays in midfield for his national team. David Alaba for Austria plays in midfield, but was always a fullback at Bayern and again at Madrid before he kind of moved into that centre-back role. So squads at international level don't have the freedom of going, our midfield's a bit weak, let's dip into the transfer market. You have to be smart with those solutions. Mm-hmm. And when you consider that currently we've got Kyle Walker and Kieran Trippier at right back, and although they're advancing in age, you have Reece James who will be there for years to come. If Wan-Bissaka keeps his form up, maybe he joins that conversation again. But you look at England's midfield, and after Rice and Bellingham, we know it's weak. Yeah. So this is... It's a win-win in many ways. Unless Mason Mount drops slightly deeper if he does make that move to Man United, or maybe Foden finds a space in midfield, you need to locate how we solve that problem, because shoehorning an aging Jordan Henderson into a team, it's just pointless at this stage. So at least with Trent, you bring that flair, that awareness. The ball for Saka for the first goal,
brilliant,
shows his quality and how well he's aware of what's going on around him. The fact that he takes that time to finish it for himself as well for the second, he's got everything he needs going forward. And actually, it seems like England really needed this at that time. So let's see if... I think we've got Ukraine and Italy in our next two, haven't we? So yeah. I'd like to see if they're brave enough to play him in that position against those two, because they will never try the hybrid role, because it's too attacking to move one of your fullbacks that high up and put them that central. And England won't do that. They don't have the centre-backs to cope with that while they're still playing Harry Maguire. So it seems like this is the best solution to making sure Trent gets the caps that a player of his quality deserves.
Yeah. Well, there's talk of Kyle Walker moving out of City to kind of wind down his career a little bit, I guess, now he's won it all. And I think in the England setup as well, there's been obviously a blessing with right backs. So maybe he's finding an opportunity now to see more of the squad time in England setup, whoever the coach may be. But not only that, but be a versatile player to take to a tournament as well, if he can master a couple of positions. So
absolutely
worth keeping an eye on. But back to the Premier League, guys. Big bombshell news this week of Bournemouth being absolutely ruthless. And I said my piece on this earlier on the channel, so check that out if you can. But Gary O'Neill's out the door after what many can be described as a really successful season with Bournemouth, not just keeping them in the Premier League, but close to mid-table. It was a really solid season from them, all said and done. But no, Gary O'Neill, despite being made permanent earlier in the season, has now been kicked out. Which, again, is absolutely ruthless for a club of Bournemouth's level. Is it ambition? They've just installed almost instantly Iraola from Vallecano as the new manager. But Dave, what's your take on that? Because he's very well known to be a very high-pressing manager. He's the most high-pressing coach in La Liga. So it's clear the kind of direction the Bournemouth board want to go. But at that expense, really, like Gary O'Neill surely earned the right, didn't he, to at least have a pre-season under his belt and get this team going in his way.
Yeah, and I think obviously we looked at the period where Bournemouth were struggling a little bit in the league last year, and they decided to obviously keep Gary O'Neill on, and we kind of questioned that decision then, didn't we? But then obviously as the season went on, and he obviously was churning these results out, they were obviously playing over, you know, playing a lot better than we expected them to and getting the results. And that's why it seemed so cruel, is that it almost felt as though they were going to give him, you know, a few games and then take him out of the firing line, bring somebody in permanently. They didn't do that. They gave him the opportunity, and they've now taken the opportunity away from him, which is, it just feels so cruel, I feel. I mean, if you look at who they've brought in, and Iraola's, I think it was linked with Leeds last year for a while. Yeah, I think Leeds tried to get him in. Iraola obviously played under Bielsa as well, so I think there's that sort of romance that he's kind of been taken under his wing.
The disciple.
I think there's some similarities, I think, between Vallecano and Bournemouth, though, as well. Obviously came up from the second division. Vallecano have only paid transfer fees for 6 players in 3 years under Iraola. And in those fees average just £2 million, which is crazy.
Wow.
Falcao.
And they've beaten Barcelona 3 times in that period. They've beaten Real Madrid. He's obviously got an experience of working with a very limited budget, of which the budget at Bournemouth, you can imagine, especially with the TV revenue, everything coming, it's going to be a lot more expansive than what he's used to working with. There's some similarities, I think, stylistically with Bielsa's teams as well. Obviously, like you mentioned there, pressing from the front, they tend to attack in transitions very quickly, and obviously try and hurt opponents in a direct nature. And he's been on record saying that he feels as though his sort of teams are better without the ball. Despite this, they were 8th in the league for possession. So you've got to say with what he's done with that team, it's been almost a miracle, really, with how far he's actually been able to go with them. I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic, and if you're a Bournemouth fan, with obviously what's coming in, and it's obviously something that they've been looking at for a while and planning quite meticulously. So obviously we'll see what happens. It's a completely different league, Premier League, to La Liga. So, and obviously the teams, especially a lot of the teams are a lot stronger, I'd say, probably than La Liga. There's more teams there that have a lot of talent, a lot more, I'd say, bigger players, you know, a lot stronger teams. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do. You can't help but feel sorry for Gary O'Neill with everything he's done.
That's
there.
The thing.
That's the main thing for me.
With Gary O'Neill, though, he earned the right to get the job permanently. But I think the worrying thing has been the last, 5 games of Bournemouth season, they lost every single one of them. So maybe there's the sign of a worrying decline there. I mean, personally, I can kind of see why the players would take their foot off the gas once relegation has been like staved off. But maybe that was enough for the board to go, I don't like the direction this is going. And you know what it's like with temporary managers given a permanent job. There's always a decline there. Like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer saw it at Manchester United. But I also can see the ambition there from Bournemouth. I can see them going, the style of play isn't incredible. Isn't amazing. It's, you know, it's quite one-dimensional. But they've learned the lessons maybe from other Premier League teams last season in getting changing early. I mean, this is very early in the summer window, isn't it? So there is chance for Iraola to take the team on the training ground, look where the weaknesses are, and maybe potentially identify transfer targets to make them an even better team next season, Miles, surely.
Yeah, I think so. It's such a weird one to read as a situation, because Bournemouth, I think, started to show their intent in January, because actually some of the players that they were lining up and being linked with then seemed really ambitious then. I remember them being really heavily linked with Zaniolo, for example, and I think he turned them down in the end. And you wonder if this is their attempt to try and kick on that next level, even in the market, by being able to attract more players than maybe Gary O'Neill would be. No distaste towards him or anything, and he deserves an immense amount of credit. But I wonder what his pull is like in the transfer market, full stop. It's difficult to judge. Iraola's only been a manager for 5 years. Mm. He's only 40. So really, you're investing in potential here, which, could you argue that Gary O'Neill had a bit of potential? It seems like, I wonder if it's a record for the quickest ever sacking of a manager who was nominated for manager of the season. It seems bizarre timing in some ways. But I suppose when you've got newish owners in charge of a club who are looking to invest massively in improving the infrastructure of the club, a big appointment can do that. And they'll be watching the teams around them invest money in their kind of setups and improve their managerial candidates. We've talked openly on this podcast about how some teams that looked like they were struggling with relegation on mid-table went out and got world-class managers last season in the likes of Wolves, even Villa in some ways. I wonder if this is Bournemouth just trying to do their bit to keep up. And if that's the case, I suppose you can't argue with it. I'm really interested to see what the reaction from Bournemouth fans is long-term, because Gary O'Neill, he will have had a great deal of favour with them anyway. And although that it wasn't always perfect, there were some remarkable results in there. And who had Bournemouth down as staying up at the start of the season?
Yeah.
I think he's done a... We've talked openly about it already on the podcast. He did a phenomenal job. Here we are. This is football.
One thing for sure, he's not going to be short of suitors, is he? After that.
I don't think so.
Gary O'Neill?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really know what his level is. You say that, but I actually think he might be. Does he have to drop to the Championship now?
I think he was expecting that anyway. I really do. I think he was surprised to get the Bournemouth job permanently because, I mean, if you said it in interviews, you know, I expected to have to drop down and like earn my stripes, basically. I don't doubt he'll do that as well. And I don't think he'll bother too much about having to do that. But it's such a shock to the system to, you know, have signed a permanent contract a matter of months ago to then be in this position. And it does remind me slightly of, I keep recalling this Southampton side that got promoted and worked through the leagues. They had, I think, Nigel Adkins in charge, who took them as far as he could, replaced him ruthlessly with Mauricio Pochettino, who everybody turned their noses up at the time. He was Espanyol coach, wasn't he? And look what happened there. So there are some similarities there in the gamble that they've taken. And maybe it's a sign of huge ambition from Bournemouth.
Yeah, but do you remember when West Brom brought in Pepe Mel? Who knows? which side of the coin are you going to land on? That's the question.
Hang on, you're attacking Wolverhampton and West Bromwich all in one game, mate. It's a West Midlands war from you.
And we can laugh at Blues. Maybe they're going to retire Joe Bellingham's number as well now. Should we just make some more jokes at some Midlands clubs while I'm at it?
I get why they did that, but that was a little bit cringe. Anyway, guys, that wraps up this week's podcast. So if you're listening, obviously, on whatever platform that may be, please do hop onto our YouTube channel and see more content throughout the transfer window. There'll no doubt be so many more twists and turns still to come. But until then, guys, great talking to you as always. See you soon.